Randall Valley, Kentucky, Carl Hurley.
Is a crowd. They told me you were out here. I was back there behind stage, and they said, they're there. I said, well, they said they were coming. And I am so glad you did. And it's such an honor for me to really stand here on the stage at historic Renfro Valley, because this is my section of the country. If you go up here to Livingston and cut left there at the bridge, then follow the road up the Rockcastle River and go back across the river again, then wind around a little more out there. That's where I'm from. And the first stage show I ever saw in my life was right here in Renfro Valley. I was just a little bitty fella. Wasn't over that tall. Still about that tall. But I remember we put cattle racks on the truck and brought the whole family. Had a great time. And tonight it's such an honor to stand here and look out at people from all over the country and friends and kinfolks from Laurel County, where I'm from. I'm so glad you're here. I wanted my Uncle Arlo. Well, thank you. Thank you so much. I was hoping my Uncle Arlo and Aunt Mavis would come, but they couldn't make it. He showed up for jury duty this week and got arrested. It's always something. But my son's here this evening. I was so glad he could make it. He was the one that went off to college there for a while. And then he went off to find himself. Went out to California. I called him the other day. I said, are you there, son? He said, no, he'd looked all over. And he wasn't there. So he's back now, going to give school another try. But I love it standing here like, you people make me feel so good coming from all over. It kind of gives me the big head. And I enjoy it. I really do. But I kind of got put in my place the other day. I was feeling kind of big, you know, but I thought I'd do something kind of nice. And I went down to the nursing home there in Lexington, and I walked in, and there was a nice lady there in the lobby, and I walked over to her, and I said, do you know who I am? She looked up at me and smiled, and she patted me on the hand, and she said, no, honey, but if you'll go up to the front desk, they can tell you. So now I don't do that anymore. I just say, I'm Carl Hurley, and I'm glad to be here. But it is good to be here. It's kind of nostalgic. It makes me go back in my mind to when I grew up in this area and kinfolks and things we did and how things used to be. I think of that more as I get older, how things used to be. Do you do that? And I love to go back and visit kinfolks. My cousin L. Dean, his wife Eula Faye, and their oldest boy, Jimmy Lee. Their little identical twins, Valene and Virgil. They would have been here tonight, but this conflicted with their vacation. They're out west someplace in their motor home. The one L. Dean built out of a milk truck. I went up last week and helped him paint it. That carnation sign was fading through there. He said the way people stare at him, you'd think they'd never seen a motor home. But he is a character. I just love to go back and find out what's been going on. I was back down through London, Kentucky the other day, my hometown, and I saw him coming out of the courthouse, had on a coat and tie. First time I'd ever seen him in a coat and tie. I stopped my car, and I rolled the window down, and I said, L. Dean. He looked around, and I said, you looking good, buddy. I said, what do people say to you when they see you dressed like that? He said, well, this morning they said, would the defendant please rise? Thank you. Oh, he's a good fella. Nice man, fine family man. You look face so mad at him though right now, she can't stand it. I tell you what happened. I was down there the other day talking to her. And she said she came in from work. He'd been wanting a VCR for years. Said she came in from work and he had his new VCR and he was sitting there on the couch trying to figure out the instructions. He had traded the TV in on it. She said, sometimes I think all that boy's dogs ain't barking. Now, this is not a recent development with him. He's a good person. He's always been a little different. I tell you, I remember when he grew up, when he was about 16 years old, he and his buddies would go up there to East Bernstead, the service station there where Highway 30 and Highway 25 intersect. And the fella had a television there, only one in town. L. Dean already had his driver's license, and they'd go up there and watch cartoons on Saturday morning. They loved Mickey Mouse. He and his buddy just thought he was the greatest thing that ever lived, and they had just built Disney World, and they figured out that's where Mickey lived. And they wanted to go see him. And one Saturday morning, they got their old car up there, and they got it greased up and all serviced up. They were going to go to Florida. Their mamas fixed them about 3 shoeboxes full of fried chicken. And they took off. 24 hours later, 16 hours of driving and 8 hours of fixing plants. They pulled into Orlando, Florida. They said they looked up over the interstate and there was a big green sign. It said, Disney World left. They turned around and came home. So he's always been a little different. He's a good person. He just thinks a little different. I was up there the other day. Ildy and I went fishing. Fished all day long. Caught one little old bass about that long. On the way back in, I said, Ildy, now he was driving, and I was sitting over there by the window. I said, I've just been figuring, Ildy. I said, if you figure up everything we spent today, if you figure the bait, the tackle, the license, the boat rental, the gasoline, everything, that little old fish cost us about $250 a piece. He said, well, just be glad we didn't catch 2. But he's a good person. Now, Eula Fay was already mad at him before that VCR incident. Oh, yeah, he's been, saying terrible things. Kids are a lot. She's on a diet. She's struggling. She's looking pretty good now. But he said, when they got mad, she was so big they had to come down the aisle single file. Made her terribly mad. Said she actually got bigger than that. Said she finally got so big, said, to get her from room to room, they had to grease the door face and then dangle a Twinkie on the other side. And she told me, she said, if they arrested that boy for being smart, there wouldn't be enough evidence to convict him. But now her diet's working, she's trimmed down, she's looking good, and I know how hard that is. I had lost at one time 40 pounds. Now my diet's in a relapse. I'm struggling. I'll tell you, you can tell how it's going to go into a relapse if you really notice. I was walking through the grocery store the other day, and I heard something calling my name. And I looked over there. There was a brand new case of moon pie. Law, I love moon pie. And I tell you how you can know when it's going to happen. You start saying things like, I can eat just one moon pie. I can quit anytime I want to. Now I'm in a 12-step program. And 11 of them say, no moon pies. I don't know what I want to do. But I have figured out, and I've been studying on this, I believe there's just so much fat. I do. I believe when the world was created, so much fat was created. And we do know this. I learned this in Mount Zion Elementary School years ago, that matter can be neither created nor destroyed. I believe fat's the same way. I believe if somebody loses it, somebody's got to gain it. I believe. And I believe there's somebody on my street on a diet right now. So I went last week back to the diet center, and I turned myself in. So they got me back on the diet, and they said, you got to get some exercise. I said, what? I don't like exercise. They sent me downtown to join sports club. And that's saying it nicely. Kind of a little torture chamber, you know. I didn't think he was going to like it. I got about a block away. I could hear him screaming. They got machines in there that'll hurt you. They did. They got me in there. They put me on one called a treadmill. Stay away from it. It's got a motor on it. They had me on that thing, almost flabbed me to death. And I took off. I said, I don't want any of that. They said, come back. Said, you got to do this every day. Said, you got to spend about 20 minutes getting your heart rate up good and high. I said, I can do that with a pot of black coffee. But I do love to come back to this area, really, back home, because the thing I remember the most when I start remembering how it used to be, as I said a few minutes ago, it's the people. Oh, the land is beautiful, the hills, the rocks, the rivers, everything's beautiful around here, but the people. Some of the most interesting people on the face of this earth live in eastern Kentucky, where I'm from. I grew up with them. It's the way they express themselves, I think, sometimes. It's just the things they'll say. I was down at the state basketball tournament this year in Louisville. Met three of my kin folks from London. Talking to them a while, I said, where are y'all staying? They said, why, no place. We just been here 3 days. That's what I like about them, you know. They're survivors. And we were getting ready to go in the Coliseum there. One old boy said, boy, I wish I'd have brought my TV. I said, why? He said, that's where I left my tickets laying. Now, where? But eastern Kentucky. The people express themselves that way. I was down there in London the other day, London, Kentucky. I was walking down the street, hardware store there. I saw a sign in the window. It said, microwave oven, $50. I said, now that's a deal. I walked in, I was looking at one. Old boy walked up to me, he said, they won't last long at that price. Mine didn't. About a week, I think it was. You got to watch how people express themselves. But I was down there the other day visiting with a little store there where I used to hang out when I was growing up. I just loved going to that little store and talk to people. And I walked in, and the first thing I saw was a big sign there. It said, beware of dogs. And I looked down there on the floor, and there was a hound dog. You couldn't tell if he was alive or dead. He was kind of he wouldn't buy the biscuit, you know. I asked the man in the store, I said, does that sign go with that dog? He said, yeah, it does. I said, my dog's not going to hurt anybody. He said, I know it. I said, boy, I put that sign up, people kept tripping over him. But they are interesting. I remember, some time ago, I was up there talking to the sheriff, and he was telling me about an incident that had happened there. He said the other day out on the gravel road there at the edge of town, said they had a head-on accident. Two old boys just plowed right into each other. And he was out there trying to sort it out, trying to figure out who caused it. And they were yaggering, you know. They looked up on the hill and the big white house up there, and Mr. Johnson was just sitting up there, rocking, like he always does, looking down over the hill. And the sheriff said, I bet he saw this. I bet he saw what happened. So they all went up the hill. He was sitting there looking at him. Mr. Johnson, he said, yeah. Said, did you see the accident? He said, yeah, I did. They said, well, we're trying to figure out who caused it. He thought a minute, kind of scratched his beard. He said, well, it appeared to me that they hit each other about the same time. That's why I love to go back home and talk to people. And I think the world of him. I knew him when I was growing up and loved to talk to him. He was the kind of person that observed life. He would observe things that most people just overlook. And he was kind of a philosopher, too. And I remember talking to him one time. He said, Carl? I said, yeah. He said, you ever watch these wild geese go over? And I said, yeah, I do. He said, you ever notice when they're flying along, so they're flying in a V? I said, well, sure. He said, do you ever notice that one of those sides of that V is always a little longer than the other one? I said, well, that's right. That's true. He said, you know why that is? I said, no. He said, it's got more geese in it. Observes things. But he's a good man. He's kind of strange, you know, kind of set in his way. He's had a hearing problem for years. His kid's been trying to get him to go to the doctor. He wouldn't go. He's just that way, you know. He didn't want to go to the doctor. Finally, they kept on to him until he decided he was going to go. But he didn't tell them. He told them he's going off on about a 3-week fishing trip. He took off to the Mayo Clinic. Got everything all fixed up, just great. And he came back home. He'd been back home about a week. And the doctor called him. Said, how are you doing? He said, it's wonderful. That's just the greatest thing that's ever happened to me. He said, I can honestly hear conversations in the other room. The doctor said, well, I guess your family's just tickled to death. He said, I haven't told them yet. But said, I've changed my will 3 times. Yes, they're good people. As I said, that's why I like to visit. Heard of something that happened up there the other day that's just, I think, just typical back home. Uncle George and Aunt Sarah that everybody around there had known for years. Aunt Sarah passed on recently. Well, it wasn't long. Uncle George, he's getting up in years. He's about 87, I think. But the woman lived across the road. She'd been widowed for some time. She came across the road there to visit Uncle George to make sure he's getting along okay, fixed supper for him. That was real nice. Wasn't long before they were sitting out on the porch after supper quite often. Got to be pretty regular. Well, some of his kin folks got concerned about it, and they came over to talk to him. They said, Uncle George said, I don't think this looks right. Said, Aunt Sarah just been dead a month. Said, you ought to wait about a year before you start carrying on this way. He said, well, I've been studying on it. He said, I'm 87 years old. I may not be around next year. And said, while I was studying on it, it occurred to me, your Aunt Sarah's as dead as she gonna be. They're kind of practical people. But they're hard-working people. Now they have a good time, love a good story, but they work hard. I don't relate to that. I like the storytelling. But they're survivors, as I said. I can remember a time that was not as easy as it is now. But I don't remember a time as hard as it used to be. When my parents grew up, some of yours, it was a little rougher. One fellow told me one day, he said, I remember one year, said we had about 14 kids. Said we ate so many rabbits one winter, said it got to where every time the dog would bark, the kids would run in a brush pile. That's kind of rough. Yeah. Well, my own daddy told me, he said, I remember a time, a lot of times, he said, when I'd have to eat cornflakes for breakfast, drink water for lunch, and swell up for dinner. Now that's a different time. But when I was born on the banks of the Rockcastle River in Laurel County, Kentucky, there was not a dentist in our county. See, times have changed so much for the better. We didn't have a dentist. But there was a fella, it was a blacksmith, that would pull your teeth. He really did. If you got the toothache so bad you just couldn't stand it, you go to him and he would pull it. One day this little boy came in there and he had toothache so bad he just about to die. And he told him, said, you got to pull this tooth. I can't stand it any longer. And that blacksmith, he started getting his tools. The fellow's legs wouldn't stand. He took off hard as he could go. He came back the next day, said, I had to come back. Said, I'm about to die. Well, he ran off again. He just couldn't stay. The third day he came back, he said, I'm absolutely going crazy. Said, you got to pull it. And he had this big rope with him. He said, tell you what you got to do. Said, I mean it. Said, you got to tie me up. You got to tie me up and pull that tooth. The blacksmith said, I'll do it if that's what you want to do. He said, I'm about to go crazy. You've got to do it. So he tied him up, and he got him down, and he pulled that tooth. And then he whipped out his Barlow knife and cut that rope loose, and that fella flew on him and beat him to death. They finally got him apart and got that blacksmith kind of revived up, and he said, what did you do that for? That old boy said, you cut me loose too quick. So they are interesting people. And how it used to be is so interesting. As I said, they're hard-working people, but now not all. You know, in every section of the community, you got a few people that don't work a lot. I was up at the store the other day hanging around, and there's two old boys sitting out there in front of the store on a bench just whittling. One of them looked over the other and said, did you hear what happened to Earl? And I said, no, why? He said, he got a job. The other guy said, no. He said, he did. The other fellow just shook his head and said, ain't in a sight what some people will do for money. Well, I'm a lot like Earl. Except I don't have a job. This is all I do. This is it. I talk all the time. The other day I was talking to my wife. I was talking. I just kept talking. And finally I looked around at her. I said, I wish while I'm talking you would quit yawning. She said, I'm not yawning, I'm trying to say something. But I tell people I'm self-employed. That sounds so much better than out of work. Well, that's right. I'm self-employed. I tell you what I did the other day. When you're self-employed, these loan officers at banks take a hard look at you. I try and trade houses. I try and sell mine, buy another one. I was sitting there talking to the loan officer. He said, "Now, what do you do?" I said, "Oh, this and that." He said, "Where do you work?" I said, "Here and there." He said, "Well, when do you work?" I said, "Now and then." I said, "When do you reckon I could get this loan?" He said, "By and by." But I have been out of work for 10 years. Only done this, and I highly recommend it. The people back home and how it used to be, as I said, they did work hard. They believed in themselves. That's important. That's the thing I remember about them, too, when I start thinking about how it used to be, that they had a lot of pride and believed in themselves, along with the hard work, and that's so important. I remember one time, we hadn't had much rain one summer, about to lose the crop, and oh, it was dry. And the preacher and a bunch of deacons gathered up down at the little church to pray for rain. And they were just praying as hard as they could pray. Now, that was days before we had all the instruments to predict the weather. And they didn't know it was up the creek, it was raining cats and dogs. And that water was coming down. And they were praying, and church right there on the creek bank. And one of them looked out because it started to rain. Oh, and they ran and looked out the window, and that creek was coming up. And just a minute, it washed that little church right off its foundation. And they climbed up through the bell tower there to get out on the roof. And the preacher was singing to it, and the deacons all over the rooftop, and here they were going down the creek. One of the deacons punched the preacher and said, "We didn't do bad for a small church, did we?" But they believed in themselves. And they helped each other. They worked for them. How did they work? The first was great. They were great. They had people just sitting there all the time. All the young folks were. They called them To and From. That was their nickname. I asked them one day, I said, "Why do you call them? Why did they call you that?" Well, I said, "Well, J. Bill, they said he knows how to get here, and I know the way home." But it's working together. Well, they gather up and help each other. Most of them share with you. Every now and then you'd run into a few that wouldn't. I remember what happened to old Burl and Larville Atwell one time. The brothers up there that I grew up with. Fine people. Burl was a great old big boy. Oh, huge. Burl couldn't wear a yellow. So like he walked down the street, people yelled, "Taxi!" And Larville, he was he's kind of gangly, kind of slim. He wore a size 14 shoe, and when he put on his straw hat, he looked like a capital I. And they were sitting right there in the middle of the gravel road. They had been up to see Uncle Arlo and his bottling works. And they were sitting there, and they had a quart jar, and they were passing it back and forth. And the preacher came down the road and caught them right there. They were just sitting there, their heads down, looking up at him. And the preacher was chastising them. He looked right at Burl. He said, "I'm 65 years old, and I have never touched a drop of liquor." Old Burl looked at him, tightened that lid down, said, "You ain't getting none of this either." But most people up there at home, they'll share with you, they'll help you, and they do have a lot of pride. I remember when I was in elementary school there, my buddy Cletus, some of you have heard me talk about him, always looked up to him. When we arrested, it was in the 5th grade. Cletus was in the 6th grade. We kind of looked up to him. He had his driver's license. Somebody said he's going to junior high on the GI Bill. But he was a good kid. And when he graduated from high school, he didn't have a lot of saleable skills and people wanted to help him, but he had a lot of pride. He didn't want to just take money, so they gave him a job polishing the cannon in the courthouse yard. Every week he'd polish that thing, and on Friday they'd give him some money. 2 or 3 months went by, he came in one day and told him he's quitting his job. They said, "What's wrong? Are you upset about something?" He said, "No, no, not at all." He said, "Each week I've been putting back a little money. Instead of going into business for myself, instead of bought my own cannon." Oh, thank you. So they have a lot of pride. They really do. But when I really start thinking about how it used to be, and one of the things that I love more than anything else is how everybody back home loves to hunt and fish. Oh, yeah. See, hundreds of years before this area we call Kentucky was a state, the Native Americans who lived here set this area aside as a place to hunt and fish. LD and I trying to keep that going. Love to fish. Love. I'm going to do some of that tomorrow. Someone told me the other day about my Uncle Maynard and my Uncle Arlo fishing. See, we take it seriously. Said they were up there at Laurel Lake. Got out there in the boat and sat there all morning, about 4 hours, with a cane pole and some worms, just sitting there. Hadn't moved. Sit along about 10:30, 11 o'clock, Uncle Arlo kind of moved his left foot. His Uncle Maynard looked over and said, "You come out here to fish or dance?" So they take their fishing seriously, but I don't think they take it as seriously as old man Farley Dweeb. I think the world of him. He loves to fish with a passion, and he and game wardens are natural enemies. He hates game wardens with a passion. The other day he said he's walking down the riverbank, had his cane pole and can of worms. Game warden stepped out of the bush and said, "I want to see your fishing license." He said, "I don't have to show you my license." He said, "I'm not fishing." Game warden said, "Now I know you either been fishing or you going fishing. I want to see your license." He said, "There's no law that says I have to show anybody any license because I'm not fishing. There's no law that says I can't carry this fishing pole and these worms down this riverbank." Game warden said, "Okay." Mr. Dweeb took off. He knew the game warden would follow him. He went through a briar thicket and just scratched himself all to pieces because he knew the game warden would do it. He went over a rock pile, slipping and sliding, bashing his shins, looked back and see the game warden. He was coming along. He crossed a barbed wire fence, ripped his pants, tore himself up, waded the river twice. Looked back at game warden as I laughed. In a few minutes, he crawled out on a big rock, put him a worm on, and pitched his line out in the water. The game warden stepped out, just torn all the pieces. He said, Now you're fishing. He said, "Now you can see my license." The boy fishing has changed a lot. Oh, and I think how it used to be. Yeah, I spent many hours at cane pole and can of worms. But the people back home, they do love to hunt and they fish. They love dogs. They really do. And I do too. I remember there in East Burnstaff, which is just out from London, about 5 miles. When I was growing up, these old boys down there, they loved to hunt so well. They started them a hunting club. Got them an old house, separate clubhouse, and they established their club. And some of these city folks came in, 3 fellas, and wanted to join the club. And they said, "These boys weren't too wild about it." They said, "Okay, you can join." Well, the first morning the city fellas went hunting, they came back just a little while and
One of them had just shot himself in the foot. He's kind of limping, you know. The other one, Hammer, had come back on an old 12-gauge shotgun and just split his thumb right there real bad. And he had that bandaged there. The other one's carrying a stack. Had something in it. These old boys were kidding. Said, "Looked like you fellas had a bad day." They said, "Yeah, we have." He said, "Bud, it's not all bad." He said, "Looks like you got something in the stack." He said, "Yeah, we know. That's our hunting dog." But they love animals. They love animals of all kinds. And, of course, being in Kentucky, we love horse racing. And I was over at Keeneland Racetrack there in Lexington this past meet in the spring. Then a boy from back home, he had his horse down there. First time he'd ever had a race horse, and he's bringing him to race for the first time. The track steward came out and he saw this fella. He's giving his horse something. Got the track steward's attention. He said, "What are you giving that horse?" He said, "Sugar cubes." Just giving him some sugar cubes. He said, "He's going to race that way. I want him to have some energy." Track steward said, "You sure those are sugar cubes?" He said, "Yeah." He said, "Matter of fact, I'll eat one. Watch this." He ate one. Take one of the track steward. Said, "You eat one." Tractor took it and looked at it and ate it. They're okay. And he walked on. Another fellow was talking. This fellow had the horse. He said, "That horse going to be fast today?" He said, "Oh, yeah. He's fast." He said, "There's not a thing here at Keeneland can catch this horse today, with the possible exception of me and that track steward over there." But I do love animals myself. Love all kinds. Got me a parrot the other day. I've always wanted one of those. I'm teaching it to talk. It's cute as it can be. My wife hates it. She hates that bird. She wants me to get rid of it. I'm not going to do it. I'm keeping it. I'm teaching it to talk. I came in the other day, though, and she was bent right down over its cage saying something to it. And I thought, "What's she doing?" And I slipped up behind her, and she was teaching it to say, "Here, kitty, 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 kitty." That's a bad thing for a parrot to say. But speaking of parrots, my next door neighbor has one. She's teaching it to talk. Yep, she's teaching to talk. All it can say is, "Who is it?" Like if somebody knocks on the door, parrot say, "Who is it?" It's cute as it can be, but that's all it can say at this point. It was. The other day, she was getting ready to have a plumber come in and check something about the sink, and she said, "I need to run the grocery. But I believe I can get to the grocery and get back before he gets here." But she didn't make it. The plumber came before he got there. She got back. Plumber knocked on the door. Parrot said, "Who is it?" He said, "It's the plumber." Parrot said, "Who is it?" He said, "It's the plumber." Parrot said, "Who is it?" He said, "It's the plumber." Parrot said, "Who is it?" He got so mad he just passed out, colder than kraut right there. And the woman came in with the girls. He said, "Lord have mercy, who is it?" Parrot said, "It's the plumber." So I'm just like everybody else back home. I love animals and also love humor. So when I stopped to think about how it used to be, and one of the things I dearly love about growing up in the Appalachian Mountains or at the edge of the Appalachian Mountains, it was the humor. I was standing up there one day talking to one of our neighbors, farmer there. We were standing out of the fence talking. This truck came down the road and hit the farmer's hen right there in the road. Just killed her right there. His feathers flew every place. Terrible. Truck driver stopped. He came back talking to the farmer. Said, "I hit your chick in there." The farmer said, "Yeah." He said, "I know you couldn't help it." He said, "It makes me feel terrible." The farmer said, "Oh, I know you couldn't help it." He said, "I want to pay you for it." He said, you don't have to do that." He said, "No, it'd make me feel better." He said, "If you'd let me pay you." The farmer said, "Okay." He said, "Well, how much you think she's worth?" The farmer said, "Well, I guess about $5. Fellow started giving $5, and the farmer stopped him and said, "Oh," said, "you better make that 10. Said, "That's the only old hen I had. When that rooster hears about it, it's going to kill him too." But the storytelling now started early. I think it was because it was one of the main forms of entertainment. Sitting around the fire and even telling stories to each other. One of the most fantastic forms of entertainment. And it did start early. Some of the little kids picked it up real early. One little fellow there at school one time, he had gotten into it a little too early, a little exuberant. He came to school every day telling these wild stories, getting all the other kids excited. And the teacher thought she was going to have to do something about that. He came into school one Monday morning. He said, "My daddy and I went fishing this weekend. We caught about 50 catfish. They weighed about 75 pounds apiece." And the teacher said, "Now, that's the kind of thing I got to stop." She wanted to show him how ridiculous he'd been sounding. She said, "Come here, I want to tell you something." She said, "I was coming to school this morning. I went past this vacant lot. Said, this Kodiak bear came out and attacked me. Said, he's just getting ready to kill me. Said, this little dog ran up and grabbed him right by the ankle. Said, just that dog grabbed him. He bent over, that little dog grabbed him by the throat and just killed him right there. Saved my life." She said, "Do you believe that?" He said, "Uh-huh." "Yeah. That's my dog." So that's the second one of them things he's killed this week. So, the storytelling started early. And it's still going on. You may have read recently, in the last couple of months, I think about 2 months ago, that a black bear moved into downtown East Fernstadt. We have people here who read it in the paper. You saw its picture in the paper. We don't know why it did it, do we? But it did. It'd go around visiting in people's backyards. Well, my Uncle Maynard and my Aunt Chlorine have moved into town, you know. My Uncle Maynard was sitting there at the kitchen table one evening. He had not heard about this bear. Now, my Uncle Maynard, every now and then, will take a little nip. Now, he's not even a social drinker. I mean, every now and then, he'll take just a little something to ward off a cold. And he is sitting there a warding one off. Aunt Chlorine says he's got a corn on his nose where the jar hits, you know. But he was sitting there at the table, as I said, he hadn't heard about this bear. And he looked out, you know. And he didn't believe what he saw. He's up there next to the chicken house. And he called Aunt Chlorine in there. And he said, "Look out in the backyard and tell me what you see." Well, she caught on just like that. She looked out and said, "Well, nothing out there. There's a chicken house. There's a coal bucket. There's a chopping axe out there at the wood pile." He said, "That's all you see?" She said, "That's it." He called my cousin Roscoe, who's staying with him. Cousin Roscoe makes a living of being out of work. They told him the other day, said, "You ought to take some kind of training so you'll know what you're out of, you know." he's smart, Roscoe is. He's smart. He's one of these fellows that, he's educated way beyond his comprehension. He knows a lot of stuff. He just doesn't understand about half of it, you know. But he called him in there and said, "Roscoe," said, "look out there and see what you see in the yard." St. Chlorine kind of winked at him, and Roscoe said he didn't see anything. Well, all night long. Said Uncle Maynard would get up and go look out the window. Nobody's ever told him anything different. But he hadn't had a cold in 2 months. Oh, so we're always pulling jokes on each other, kidding each other. It was a way of life. I think that's one of the reasons I deal in humor now. And I remember when we got radio, the all entertainment had really advanced. Then we could listen right here, the shows that came from right here in this valley, Renfro Valley. And on Sunday morning, we would listen to the Sunday morning gathering. I'll bet there are people right here who remember those shows. Oh, yeah, I believe it's still going on, huh? Well, we got radio, changed our life. And I remember one time, my buddy Merv and Rudy and I would run home from school and turn that radio on and listen to programs like Sky King, Batman, Superman. Well, old Mervin got to thinking he was Batman. Oh, we'd get out in the barn loft and we'd take these big old chenille towel, big bath towel, and put them around their neck. We'd zoom around there and jump off the bales of hay. The old Mervin, now he was tougher than a bus station stake. And one day he just zoomed out of that barn loft, boom, right down into the driveway, just a cloud of dust came up. Well, they came out of the fields running, they saw him land, you know. And old Mervin's up dusting himself off, and they hollered, "What happened?" He said, "Man, I don't know." He said, "I just got here." Thank you. Well, we do look for the humor. That's how it used to be, and it's how it still is. We laugh. We laugh at each other, but I tell you what we really don't do. We don't make fun of people. No, I do not do that. People I grew up with don't do that. We laugh at what people do and what people say. Now, that's funny. No, we don't laugh at the individual. We don't laugh at the person. But we all do and say kind of dumb things, don't we? One of the dumbest things I've ever said was the other day. Sometimes you know when you say a dumb thing, you know as soon as you say it that it was dumb. We were getting ready to go someplace. My wife came through the house and I said, "Don't you have a dress that looks better than that?" I knew that was dumb. We've had to build on two closets. And every dress has to have a pair of shoes to go with it. I got a pair of shoes. These. Somebody asked me, "Which shoes are you going to wear?" I say, "Both of them." But I tell you, the dumbest thing, I believe I've ever done was one time. See, we laugh at ourselves, too. We may laugh at what other people do, but through this section of the country, we laugh at ourselves. Well, just like the other day, well, during the last election, sheriff came in up there at the store. He's running for re-election. He was laughing. He said, "What are you laughing about?" He said, "I stopped up here to see this woman up on the hill." Said she was sitting there on the porch breaking a mess of beans. So I walked up to her and I said, "Want you to vote for me for sheriff." She said, "Well, I don't know you, but I'll probably vote for you because everybody around here said anybody would be better than the one we got now." But one of the dumbest things, I guess the time I felt the dumbest, I might have done dumber things, but I really felt dumb on this one. I was just getting into the speaking business. I was still teaching at Eastern Kentucky University. And I was going out one evening to speak at a 200th anniversary of a town not too far from here. The Chamber of Commerce was putting on a dinner for this celebration, and they asked me to come be the speaker. This was in January, I believe. And it was about 20 degrees below zero. It was cold. And I got there early, the hotel where we were having the dinner. And so I got there early, so I sat in my car a few minutes and let it run a few minutes and reading something. And anytime I do that, I leave the keys in the car. That's standard procedure. Well, I went in to make the speech, and they said, "Now, when you make your speech, we know you've got to get back home. You've got to get up early in the morning and go to school. If you want to leave as soon as you make your speech, you can leave because we're going to give out a lot of awards and so forth." I said, "Okay." Well, I made my speech and I ran back out there to the car. Oh, it was cold. Started to get in. Door wouldn't open. I
myself from a cave. Uh-oh. I looked in the car, and there they were, hanging there. And I walked back into the hotel, and I asked the desk clerk if I could have a coat hanger. She gave me a coat hanger. And I went out there, and I got that window pried over, and I got that hanger down in there, and I worked until I was just about frozen to death. I was frostbitten. I couldn't have stood another 5 minutes. And I got that thing unlocked. Oh, kept on it. I opened the door. I thought, what'll I do with this coat hanger? It's too cold. I said, I'll throw it in the back seat, get rid of it later. I don't like to drive in a coat like this. I jerked the coat off, and I threw it in the back seat, and standing there in my shirt sleeves, and I slammed that car, and it's just something about the way it slammed. It was a sound like, you did another dumb thing. And I reached and grabbed that handle, and sure enough, I had mashed that button back down some way. And I was frozen to death. I walked back in to the desk clerk. And I hated to tell her. And she was looking at me now. I said, I locked my coat in the car. And it was the look on her face. It was not so much what she said. It was like, she handed me another coat hanger. Then she said, you're the professor, aren't you? But we do love humor. That's how it used to be. That's how it still is. It's a lot different today, the rat race, the hustle and bustle. Heard of a fellow the other day that had just gotten tired of it, just dropped out of society. We don't know, nobody knew really what happened to him. Energetic young reporter of the local paper took it upon himself to find him, found him up here on the lake close by, had him a little cabin built. He was sitting on the porch rocking. Reporter came up to him and said, we wondered what happened to you. He said, I just got tired of the rat race. He said, I got tired of the hustle and bustle. So I came up here and built this little cabin because I figured out all it took for me to be happy was my Bible, my rosary, and my dandelion wine. The fellow said, is that all? He said, yep. My Bible, my rosary, and my dandelion wine. Said about that time the screen door on that little cabin flew open. Fine-looking young woman stepped out. He looked down and said, Rosie, get the man a glass of wine. Thank y'all. Thank you.